The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Thank you. So, suddenly it's spring. I mean, it was freezing with the long underwear midweek. And now the daffodils are out. I hope you noticed. So if you had participated in this week's Urban Ango retreat, Urban Sesshin, you would have found that we were focusing on what do we notice, what do we see, what kind of attention are we putting to things. Gesho's programming was very creative and had us looking at art, tasting halva for a really long time in the mouth, and going out and looking at a tree for half an hour in conversation, you and the tree. Wonderful experiences of attention, awareness that we participated in during this. And throughout the Ango period, it was Gesho who selected a poet, Ryokan, for us to study and pay attention, because poets so often are showing us how to pay attention, to realize, to be aware. So this whole period since the year in Sesshin has been our regular 90-day Ango. Ango means peaceful dwelling. An is peace, and go is dwelling, place to be. So somehow in the midst of all this political, ecological crisis that we're aware of, and in the middle of this noisy, chaotic city that many of us love, we managed to come here for a peaceful dwelling, to stop and sit, a peaceful dwelling. And how do we do this? You know, it was perfectly illustrated by the work that we did this week in the Urban Sesshin. We emphasized attention. Where are we putting our attention? Awareness, putting our attention and then interrogating that. There I go again. Wonderful. Focus, wide and narrow. So our Shuso Gesho has studied these aspects of creative attention for many years. And she shared them with us in a really graceful, lighthearted way this week. Her name, in which she produces her artwork, is Sal Randolph. She's a poet, a writer, and a painter, musician, and who works with different kinds of groups in terms of art and new ways of looking at art. So welcome to the senior student team, Gesho. So Shusos, whom we call senior students, are, in our tradition, all koan students. And any Shuso has worked on koans for many years. They've moved through at least 100 of them, koans. And that makes sense, since koans are about the pitfalls of talking about Dharma practice. That's what they're about, altogether. So if you're going to have people talking about Dharma practice, maybe they should have studied the pitfalls for 5 or 8 or 10 years. Maybe they should have realized it's impossible, and yet you have to do it. It's one of those strange ironies. So it makes sense that those whom we select as a shuso are koan students. But that doesn't mean that long-term sangha members who do not undertake koan study, it doesn't mean that they are somehow less enlightened by any means. It simply means their training is different. They're equally empowered to manage our community. They simply do it in a different way. They're involved with service and sangha relations intimately. And so you see that. All kinds of leadership emerging from our community, not just koan students, but all the practice. So tomorrow, Gesho will face us all in what I like to call Dharma dialogue, but which everyone else seems to like to call Dharma combat. That is the old phrase. So today, at the end of the day, after our formal tea, we'll post the koan that she'll be speaking about tomorrow and which she will defend her interpretation of to all of us who will ask her questions. So there's a chance to sign up and either dialogue or combat with our shuso tomorrow. So do stay in the evening so that you can sign up for this delightful aspect of our practice, where there is a kind of resonance to our Zen tradition. Our whole lineage is about dialogue, about back and forth. Not so it's not like one spiritual authority that lays down the law, but it is dialogue. It's dialectic, and it reveals so much, and it's a lot of fun too. We get a lot of laughs out of Dharma dialogue and Dharma combat. So I'm thrilled that we studied awareness, attention, and concentration, this particular ongo. As I said before, you know, our focus can be like pinpoint, like just that. Or it can be wide. And those are the twin forms of meditation that we practice here. When we practice counting our breath or focusing on a koan, we're very focused. It's like that. But when we're doing shikantaza, we just sit. It's very wide-angled. You see, the room kind of expands and the white wall kind of expands because there's no particular place to rest. You are in that wide-angled shikantaza way of being. And it all depends on the needs of the moment, which you do. I think that all kinds of art expression, life expression, requires this rhythm of concentration, focus, and awareness, a wide open view. Whether it's visual arts or music, poetry, or relationship. This is how we gain new insights, whether they're abstract or concrete. Here is Master Dogen. His waka on awareness, it's called Moonlit Waves. When the mind is quiet, the moon reflects within it. Then, even if there are waves, they are bright. So remember that the moon represents oneness, right? That kind of sense of oneness that we get. So again, when the mind is quiet, the moon reflects within it. Then, even if there are waves, they are bright. So the moon is this non-dual quality. Lots of poetry, China, Japan, states about the moon reflected in the water, the oneness. But we can't ignore the waves of our thinking. So this moon of oneness is brightening the choppy waves that is our mind. This is a wonderful, wonderful image. So I see here in this Sangha, year by year, more bright moon, even with the endless waves of reality, those waves that crash around us, they're bright, filled with the light of insight, the light of appreciation of how service gives back. So, of course, here we are in this rented loft space in the heart of Manhattan. And we all live independent lay lives, every single one of us. We ride subways, and we walk, and we text. And we're overflowing with calls for our attention. Data and living beings in the source of our life. Still, we who are here today manage somehow to enter the Dharma in the midst of all that busyness. Here's another Dogen's waka. Attaining the heart of the sutra are not even the sounds of the bustling marketplace, the preaching of the Dharma. Attaining the heart of the sutra are not even the sounds of the bustling marketplace, the preaching of the Dharma. That's a koan. How do you allow the preaching of the Dharma to enter your heart when the L train isn't running? When the subway stops and there is simply not room to enter. There's a wall of bodies and you throw yourself on them and bounce back. Well, guess I'll wait till the next one. Don't you hear the sound of the Dharma sometimes? When you give your seat to someone? Or when a child makes eye contact with you and you start to play with them across the aisle? When you realize spring has come? Maybe. We'll see if there's a cold front. The practicing of the Dharma in each of those activities. When we can notice it, when we can cast our attention on what is going on, when we're not lost in this mind game. Here's Ryokan, from the book of poems we studied during the Sangho period. He talks about oneness and attention. Walking to a neighbor's bath, clogs clatter loudly, winter moon. Walking to a neighbor's bath, the clogs clatter loudly, winter moon. Oh, and the everyday act of walking to the bathhouse, right? He hears his wooden sandals clacking on the ground. And thus he evokes the moon, that inseparable oneness that's always around for us, even when the A train roars into the station. What attention, what awareness. clack, clack, clack. Hearing the sound. Whoa. It's the moon. It's the wisdom of our interconnection with everything. Next, our cell phone buzzes. With me, my watch vibrates, and so it's not enough to have the cell phone buzz, but I'm announcing messages coming in. I imagine soon they'll have just like whole suits that will just... And what do we see there? But, you know, mainly the troubles of the world. Looking at my email is like entering, in the old days, a crowded magazine store where there's things are shouting all over. Or a courthouse where people are weeping and angry. Or a busy street. I gaze at my screen. Another Brexit story. AOC's being attacked again. And another unbelievable act of corruption. Some of us who naively felt that education was an answer to many of the problems have just been so shocked by the latest news in of bribery and corruption in that area. In these schools we knew about and thought were great. And then there's NASA's report on the climate. Keep looking at my cell phone. My son wants to meet me for coffee. Does Zendo need something? What shall I make for dinner? All of these things coming in. Where's the moon? Where's the moon? Musō Soseki was this brilliant artist from the 14th century. He was a Zen monk and is famous for his garden designs. And he wrote this poem. Satori, you know, Satori is awakening. That would be like when we look at the moon and realize that it's not about the messages on our phone necessarily, not only about them. So he says, Satori noted, the mind like quicksilver goes, falsely enlightened, down those old wrong-headed roads, each more wrong than the other. Satori noted, the mind like quicksilver goes falsely enlightened down those old wrong-headed roads, each more wrong than the one before. That should make you feel better about your practice. That's what some people would call normalizing. The moment after attention, the moment after insight, after realization. Soseki says, it appears we can't grasp attention, awareness, focus. We can't grasp anything. Or down we go, down those old pathways in our mind. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Will this mind of ours learn to pay attention? Will I pay attention? How do we do this? How do we learn to pay attention? The best teaching on this for me is from a 20th century American poet, Sid Corman. He writes, "I will tell you the secret. Listen. What is it, you ask? I keep telling you. Listen. I will tell you the secret. Listen. What is it, you ask? I keep telling you. Listen. Listen. What is that listening for us? What is it that Corman is telling us? To be in this moment mind, not ahead and not behind, but this moment mind. That's Dogen's moon. That's Soseki's Satori. And Ryokan's clacking sandals against the boards. How do we make our waves bright? Isn't it through our mind, our attention? Can we really hear what Corman's saying? To be aware of this moment mind. Dogen, in his study on time, Uji, wrote, "Each moment is all being, is the entire world. Reflect now whether any being or any world is left out of the present moment." Each moment is all being, is the entire world. Reflect now whether any being or any world is left out of the present moment. Think now of anything you can think of that is not the present moment. How to be alive to the sound of the street, shadow on the wall, the frown, the isness of life. How to be alive to the profound intimacy of your life. Your life. It's so simple. What I'm trying to say is that we're called to not just glance at our life, but to be in our life, to be completely intimate with our lives. Vigorously abiding in each moment is the time being right now. So I ask you to ask yourself, what would the vigorously abiding in the time being be for you in your life? Actually being present to what you're feeling, to the shadows in the room, to the little bit of air that the fans are giving us. How easy it is to slip away. So that's why I think you're all here in this strange place doing this strange practice. We face a blank wall. You know, sometimes we talk about, we'd like to take some pictures of what the Zendo's like, but don't take pictures of people facing a wall. It just doesn't work. But it does work for the person facing the wall. Vigorously abiding in the moment. Each breath. We train ourselves to pay attention. over and over and over again. Back to the present moment. Back to our breath. Back to the intimacy of our life. Not the story, but the intimacy of our life. So this practice, you know, we pay attention to how our feet are on the ground, how our cushions are set. When we do Orioke, how our bowl sits with the other bowls in relationship. It's a spatial thing. Each of these things are just ways to train us to come back to this. And this is what we've been studying, because it is so important. Because attention brings connection. Connection brings caring. And caring brings compassion. And compassion brings wisdom. Suddenly you realize who could be left out of your dream. Who do I leave out of my connection, of my caring, of my compassion? Who can be left out? That annoying Sangha member? Everyone but that one. That family member? Ooh. The homeless guys down the street. Some would leave out the immigrants. Some would leave out prisoners. How about those so afflicted with anger? Do we leave them out? What can we really leave out when we began to pay attention, when we began to care and to feel compassion and to recognize our connection with all of them, the corrupt ones? Yeah. So urgent that we pay attention to the earth itself, that we attend to our home, to the air that we're breathing and the ground that we're standing on, that we study and create new and fruitful ways to take care of our crisis on the earth. So, yes, we're all being seduced by these shiny gadgets, streaming pictures and voices, drama. But let's pay attention to our attention so that we can make the waves bright. The waves are inevitable, but they can be bright if they are reflecting the moon of oneness, of interdependence. So that's what makes the sounds of the marketplace a sutra. The clacking shoes turn into music. Let's listen. Listen. And then act. Here's my gatha for you. Pay attention to this life, yours, mine, and the earth's itself. Let awareness bathe us in fruitful action.